Hey, it's episode 408 of the 343 podcast. The World Cup groups are out. Benny wanted to know what my reactions are to the groups, in particular, obviously for our audience, the United States. How are they actually going to fare at this edition of the World Cup? Next, we go into the media. Yes, the big, bad American soccer media. And the point of our ire is Jimmy Conrad, former U.S. men's national team player. He had some not so nice things to say about Mauricio Pochettino. Surprise, surprise. Even though he's flip-flopping and now is on Team Pochettino, I don't know. There's still a little stick up his butt and a stick up the collective butt of the media here. So we dive into that. The USL Players Union is also a topic that gets brought up because I don't think they're doing a very good job of representing their players. Why? Well, you're going to have to listen to that segment. And last but certainly not least, for all you coaches out there, you know how difficult it is to manage your players at any age group, at any level. In particular, a very difficult management problem is with respect to playing time. Benny asked me this very important question, and I give you what I've converged to after all these years in the space. So you don't want to miss it. Having said that, we're going to get into the episode right now, but I must remind you, we sponsor ourselves. We don't accept outside sponsors. How do we do that? We have products and services for coaches at 343coaching.com. It is based on the seminal, the pioneering work of Brian Kliban, who helped revolutionize American youth development here. You get to see him in action, in his team environment, in his element, with the actual players, without things being scripted in any way, shape, or form. And you get a holistic methodology from A to Z on how to get your teams on the right track. So coaches, get your butts over to 343coaching.com, sign up right away, because the longer you wait, let's face it, you're just delaying the inevitable. And I won't say what that is, but I think you can understand. Parents, the same goes for you. You are coaches off the field. You need to mentor and guide your kids in an appropriate fashion. What is an appropriate fashion? Well, we help you understand that at 343masterclass.com. And lastly, if you happen to be coaching in the 7v7 format, we have that specifically covered for you as well at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go. What would you like to talk about?
At the end of the episode, Gary, we can get into some coaching stuff, but some current events. Obviously, the World Cup draw came out today. You know I got to bring it up. You know, I got to bring up Jimmy Conrad's comments the other day about Pochettino. And I also saw an interview from Pulisic responding to the World Cup draw. And he said a quote that I'm going to bring up. Pretty funny to me. So we'll talk about all that today. Action-packed episode, Gary.
Okay, give it a go. Fire away. Just for people who are new, because I know we've kind of doubled the audience in the past couple of months. So there's a lot of new people here. There's zero preparation from my end. You just surprise me every week. So I think people need to be aware of that. It's a little bit of a hedge from my, you know, from my own benefit, right? It's like, hey, guys, you're getting the fresh me without any rehearsal, any preparation, any scripting. So, and many of the episodes that I look back on, Benny, I'm like, I think a lot of gold nuggets come out, but there's just so much more that I could have said about a particular topic. But anyways, fire away.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Gary, when you're an expert on a topic, you're able to just spit fire very clean, you know, very impressive. It's like when you see a manager doing a post-game conference, you can tell if they're a seasoned vet and they've been doing it a long time and they actually know what they're talking about versus maybe a new manager or somebody that actually doesn't know the game at a high level and it's kind of just fluff, the answers that they're giving, so a lot of respect to you, Gary.
Yeah, but Benny, there's just so much depth that doesn't get said. You know, that's always the frustrating part. Like, because you can go on forever and ever and ever and you forget about things. Like in the last episode, one of the things that we kind of glossed over, which was very important, I can't believe that I didn't say it. We were going over all the points of Pochettino's interview with Andres Cantor. And the most important one was he said, the reason it's entertainment here in the United States is because there's no relegation in MLS. There's no promotion relegation in American soccer. And that completely escaped my mind. Like, how did that escape my mind? And we didn't even talk about it. But just as an example, so I repeat again, fire away, Benny. Let's see what comes out this time.
For sure. Well, I mean, dude, we bring up promotional relegation every episode, so I'm surprised that it slipped through mine too here. All right, let's start with, first of all, the U.S. group. Okay, you have, I would say, a pretty easy group for them, Gary, would you say? I mean, I think when Pochettino saw it, I think his reaction was, okay, I think we can win the group. Your thoughts on the group, Gary? Obviously, it's Paraguay, Australia, and then it's going to be the winner of the playoffs. What are your thoughts on the group, Gary?
Yeah, it's very accessible. Look, I'm going to give you something that's cliche, but it's very, very true. Every game is difficult at the World Cup. There are no gimmies. Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia, okay, in their first group match, and nobody would have predicted that. That was an easy 3 points on paper that everybody had for Argentina going into that match, and look at what happened. And so that as the backdrop, look, Paraguay is a complicated opponent, very complicated. All the South Americans are complicated, but Paraguay in particular in World Cups always is a nightmare, historically speaking, for their opponents. They were a nightmare for Spain when Spain won the World Cup. Spain barely escaped Paraguay to continue advancing. Is it manageable? Yes, of course it is, especially because you're at home, Benny. And that's the other key factor that we have to keep in mind here is when you're at home, the advantage in a World Cup, at least historically speaking, is enormous. I don't know what exactly are the psychological triggers that make that a fact, because if you look at South Korea and Japan, when it was over there, they performed very well, far exceeding expectations of the rest of the world. When it was in Russia, like, who the F is Russia, you know, historically speaking, in World Cups, and they went very far, and they ultimately lost to the finalist Croatia, barely. And so the United States, and let's talk about United States 1994. I mean, they barely lost to eventual World Cup champion, just barely 1-0. And it came out, I think yesterday or today, that Dunga, who was a member of that Brazilian team, when he was asked what was the toughest game you've ever played, like in a World Cup, you know, and he said it was the United States in the United States. So Paraguay can be managed. Australia always gives a valiant effort. If we want to talk about team identity of Australia and how they're viewed around the world, it's a very physical team. There's nobody there that's Neymar, right? There's no talent, like that kind of a talent on Australia. But they're going to work very, very hard. They can complicate you. They even kind of complicated Argentina in the last World Cup too. Argentina kind of, if it weren't for Messi breaking that open and then Dibu Martinez making an incredible save near the end of the game versus Australia, Argentina might have been in trouble. So again, it'll be a tough match. The U.S. can handle it. And then what's the third one? The third one is a European playoff, right? You're muted, Benny.
Yeah, Gary. So it's either going to be Turkey, Romania, Slovakia, or Kosovo.
I mean, the obvious pick there is probably Turkey. Yeah, so.
Think so? I think Romania is going to make a run.
Who knows? Who knows? But the U.S. is winning that game. If I had to pick which one is the easiest match, it's that one.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, totally. And, man, over decades, again, my heritage is from Argentina, in South America in particular. We always talk about mano negra, okay? And mano negra, we've discussed previously, means black hand. And what black hand means in South America, it's a euphemism. It's a metaphorical expression to communicate corruption. And we always, always have talked about FIFA rigging the draw, right? And who gets who in the groups and the brackets and all that. And look, you can't watch the draw and say, oh, it's rigged, because how the hell do you rig that, right? It's live. The people are picking the balls out of the stuff. So I can't say it's rigged, but the U.S. got a very, very favorable group. There's no question about that. Rigged, maybe it doesn't have to be rigged in the classic sense. It could just be a mathematical thing where the probabilities are in a particular country's favor. Mathematically, you know, when you're doing the draw. And what does that mean? Look, I'd have to research it a little bit to give you a good coherent answer, but have you ever heard of this sort of like paradox, even though it's not a paradox, of if you're in a room with 20 people, I forgot what the number is, 20 people or 50 people, the probability is that somebody in that room will share the same birthday with you is almost 100%. So, and you're like, how is that possible? That's impossible, right? So there's these little unintuitive mathematical things that exist that can be leveraged by people who know math against people who don't know math. And that's how you get these easy groups for the host nations and nice road trips like Argentina had to the final. But anyway, that aside, because obviously I haven't done my homework to give you a good coherent answer. So anyway, Benny, we'll win the group is my intuition.
9 points, Gary? Or you think there'll be a tie in there?
I think there might be a tie. I think, man, because I think it's U.S. against Paraguay is the first match for the U.S. Paraguay knows that if they can get a point there, they're in really good shape for the rest of the way. So they're, I mean, everybody comes out gangbusters, but I just, there's something special about the first match, Ben. So that might be the tie.
Yeah, no, you might just see them sit back and play a super low block and defend for their lives, dude. Because you're right. I think if they get the point there, I think they can for sure advance into the next group. But here, you talk about home field advantage and like corruption and rigging. Watch where you're going to see some Paraguay and Australian visas get denied, bro. No, but even so, I mean, I feel like Paraguay will travel well. But I don't know, man. It's crazy to me. Like, I think FIFA initially came out and said, like, oh, we're going to make the tickets inclusive for everybody and we're going to try and allow, like, the real fans to be there. And then it comes out that, like, you see the people that won the lottery and now they're reselling the tickets for, like, fucking $10,000 or so. I don't know. Are we going to get the true hardcore soccer-first demographic fans in there? It's going to be tough.
There's an interesting dynamic, in my opinion, here in the United States. There's the hardcore soccer first demographic, which is the non-MLS demo and the non-USMNT fan demo, the American Outlaws and all that. Those guys aren't soccer first people, okay? The hardcore soccer first people that we're talking about are the foreign immigrant Americans here, in particular the Mexican Americans. They are willing to break the bank and go in debt to go see these sorts of things. Versus the classic suburban household. But at the same time, the classic suburban household here, which is the non-soccer hardcores, they, you know, stereotypically and in reality have a lot more disposable income. You know, they're white, they have their white collar jobs, their middle management, you know, for their careers. There might be some lawyers and doctors and engineers mixed in there. So they have the money to fork over $500, $1,000, $1,500, $5,000, because, you know, it's like a once in a lifetime sort of opportunity. In their lifetimes, the World Cup probably will never be in the United States again. And they probably want to give their kids that experience. So that's why the prices are what they are too, Benny, because America has is the wealthiest country on earth, and they have the biggest world-class soccer market on earth.
Yeah. What, will you be trying to go to a game, Gary?
No. I really I'm not going to go. I've been to World Cup. It doesn't mean that much to me, Benny. Honestly, I will enjoy, and frankly speaking, I will enjoy it a lot more in the comfort of my home or in the comfort on, you know, on a bar top at some restaurant. That is more enjoyable to me than having to rub elbows and feel other humans around me who aren't even focusing in on the game, you know, and I have to kind of like get up and get out of their way because they're going to go make a beer nacho run, you know, in the middle of the game or at halftime. Like, miss me with all that, dude. And for me to pay to have those sorts of annoying experiences, and then you're at the top of the freaking stadium, Benny. And then you're at the top and you can't even fucking witness what's going on. Or you might be in the back corner of a goal. Like, this is no way to enjoy a football match, at least not for me.
Yeah. No, dude, it's really sad. You, like, during the game, Gary, the concession lines are going to be fucking long, bro. Which is, like, that's just sad, dude. I went to a Barcelona game at the Camp Nou, and it was, like, I don't know, 10 minutes left in the half, and my girl's like, oh, like, can we go like get something? I'm like fucking thirsty, right? And you walk out, and then there's literally nobody at the concessions, bro, because everybody's just focused in on the game. And I was like, damn, this is proper culture. I just hope, bro, like, can the U.S. please come up with some better chants, bro? Like, this, I hate the fucking, the I believe chant, and it's just so, like, so cheesy, bro. Versus you see every other country in the world, bro, like, fucking they get so into it, passionate, singing proper songs, bro. And I think it helps the players, bro, you know? Versus if you're a player on the field and you hear the I believe chant, you're like, get the fuck out of here. Or the, hey, the Seattle guy's going to be there. Fight and win.
It's so soft, Benny. It's so soft. Everywhere else in the world, and obviously, again, with my Argentine heritage, the chants in the stands have profanity. They're all the chants have profanity like crazy, okay, or some sort of questionable remarks, if you will. Here, that stuff's like not allowed, you know, and nobody would dare, you know, the supporter groups wouldn't even dare concoct a chant that's too hardcore, you know, or says too many bad words or says things that aren't politically correct. Soft, Ben. So it's cringe as fuck. I believe that we will win. What the fuck what are we? It's like, it's literally like AYSO 30 years ago. 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? La la, la la la. Oh my God. That is the culture we're steeped in.
It's sad, bro. And I remember, bro, when I was a kid going to the Galaxy games and the Riot Squad back in the day, like they would have chants. There was a chant where basically they're singing to the referee, like, who's your father, referee? You don't have one. You're a bastard. Like that. Okay. At least that was like some proper culture, but I'm sure they got banned from singing that, bro. It's sad. What has transpired in this country?
It's got to be a family atmosphere, Benny. Family. There's going to be women and children in the stands.
Cancel culture, bro. Argentina's group, bro. Seems like a for sure win. Are you happy about that? Do you actually care about the Argentine national team? Oh, and by the way, I forgot. I wanted you to tell everybody how you watched the Argentina final of the World Cup. Because to me, it was funny. But I would think like you would be with some Argentinian friends and fucking getting beers and all
no,
into the
man. No. It's widely known amongst everybody who's ever known me since I was a young teenager. I don't want to watch like quote unquote important soccer matches with anybody. I don't want to be around anybody. I want to be alone and watch the match. I just can't stand the interruptions from others. I can't stand the commentary. And if I'm going to be around with friends who don't know about football very much or as much, I especially can't stand that sort of commentary. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm not doing it. I want to focus in on the game, on the match exclusively, concentrated. I want to feel all the emotions without external stimuli or interruptions. And so, yeah, Ben, I just went into my garage at my place. And I have a sofa in the garage that we didn't bring into the actual living area. And I just plopped myself on that sofa and enjoyed it from the quietness of my garage, away from my girl, away from the dogs, away from everybody and anything. And my phone, by the way, I didn't even bring with me. Stayed upstairs. Zero interruptions, Ben. And that's how it'll be for this World Cup too.
Locked in your garage, bro, with the bottle of Malbec.
No drinking, because it was early in the morning. Come on, man. Come on, dude. Then I'd have a problem.
There you go. Nah, dude, it's a fine. But I feel like that's kind of individualized for you, Gary, because isn't the Argentinian culture kind of being together in the moment and enjoying the game together?
Yes and no. Yes and no. There was a recent Marcelo Bielsa interview where he was very candid. I think it was after the loss against Uruguay when he went against the U.S., when he went on a 2 or 3 hour press conference. And he confessed something that I haven't seen him confess prior, at least not as directly, where he's like, you have to understand, he's telling the audience, the journalist or whatever, I am a toxic man, he says. Like, people, you know, can't be around me. I you know, I make them unhappy, and, you know, for whatever reason, because I'm too serious. I'm too self-absorbed, self-involved. And, you know, he just likes being alone and with his mind and trying to come up with solutions to problems on his own. He gave an anecdote of going, when he goes to a restaurant or coffee shop or something, he just cracks open the newspaper. And I know this is old school boomer sort of stereotype or something, crack open the newspaper and just studies things and sips on his cup of coffee. And that's when he's feeling most alive, is when he's alone with his thoughts. So there is a classic Argentinian, outrageously passionate man, but you know, he lives it very differently than the stereotypical thing that you see on TV where everybody's partying and now in the middle of the streets with friends and family.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, Gary. I'm not calling you weird or anything. I'm just wondering how the culture is.
So I am strange, and that's okay.
There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong.
No, I think there's stuff wrong with you people.
Anyways, so Gary, I was looking at all the groups, and you know, every year or every 4 years when the groups come out, you always are quick to look, not you, but everybody, like, who is the group of death, right? And I'm looking at all the groups and I'm just thinking, like, fuck, there doesn't seem to be this one this year, you know? And then I open X and I see your post. There is no group of death this year because the tournament has expanded and kind of watered down a bit. So what are your thoughts on that? I feel like once it gets to the knockout stages, then it's going to be some really good games, but it seems like in every group there's like two clear front runners. No really group of death this year.
Yeah, not definitely not like in past editions. In past editions there were usually at least one group, sometimes two, and people would debate which of the two was the real group of death, where you had two heavyweights maybe, or two legitimate teams that you would say are contenders to battle it out. Then a third one who is a legitimate like dark horse potential in that same group. And then the fourth team would be like, ooh, that's a team that can complicate any contender. I mean, they themselves aren't contenders to the World Cup title, but they can complicate and beat anybody on any given day. So that's traditionally kind of what the group of death looked like. Yeah, I don't see one here. In my post, I was tempted at the very end to say maybe the England group can be considered a, you know, something on that order because it has England, Croatia, and then what's the third one? Ghana, maybe, is the third group in that group. Can you check that?
Sorry, I just keep muting so you don't hear the background noise, but it's England, Croatia, Ghana, and Panama.
And Panama. Yeah. So, okay. England, Croatia, you're like, okay, that kind of fulfills the criteria that I gave you before, even though Croatia, let's be real, Croatia this time, they're not contenders. Okay. And then Ghana, look, this is not the same Ghana as the Ghana from 10 years ago, 15 years ago. This is not the same Ghana. Are they a good team? Sure. But not so much, Benny. And then Panama, let's be real. Panama, I don't think has gotten a single point in a World Cup ever. This is a pushover team. And just because folks here in the United States are like, oh, well, Panama, you know, has beaten Mexico and the United States and CONCACAF, and who killed that? Like that fucking matters. So yeah, that might be the most kind of complicated-ish group, but it's not a group of death, Ben.
Do you think Mexico will win their group?
Who has Mexico?
Mexico, South Africa, Korea Republic, and then the winner of Playoff D, which would be Denmark, North Macedonia, Czechia, or Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, Mexico should be fine, Ben. Mexico should, at least on paper, via anybody with intuition, would say Mexico wins the group.
Yeah.
You got to remember, they're at home too.
Yeah, true. All right, last thing or actually two more things. Is it too early, Gary, for you to give a prediction on who you think's going to win the entire thing?
I think it is too early. Let me see what comes to mind. I'm flipping the pages here.
No chance Argentina goes back to back, no?
The only reason I even consider it's possible is because I feel like everybody else isn't that great. I don't see a team out there that like, oh my God, who's gonna stop these guys? Like in editions past, that's always been a thing. You can look at Brazil, or you can look at a Germany, or you can look at a France, or you can look at an Argentina, and you're like, oh, who the hell's gonna stop this freight train? But in this World Cup, I don't see that. So I kind of feel like this one is up for grabs, dude.
Yeah. Could be a dark horse too, no?
Yeah. Let's talk again maybe after the March window.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So we'll hold off your prediction.
I think Canada might be fucked in the group. Who does Canada have?
They have Qatar, Switzerland, and a winner of playoff A. Let's see who's winner of playoff A.
That's Italy.
Fuck, dude. Well, Italy's been shocking recently, you know?
Oh, but you know, Ben, see, the whole thing's watered down. Isn't it like 8 of the 12 third place teams advance? Like, everybody's advancing, dude. The group phase is stupid.
Yeah, and I think all the host nations will advance. So, Gary, I was looking through some of the media responses, and then an interview of Pulisic came up, and it's him responding to the question of like, oh, you know, what did you think of the group and how they came out? And he basically said like, oh, you know, our objective is obviously to get out of the group, you know, and we're going to try and make a run. But then he said something that shocked me. He said, no matter what round we lose, we're going to be disappointed. So not even the mentality of like, hey, let's go and try and win it. His literal answer was, no matter when we lose, we're going to be disappointed and we're going to try and make a run. Versus the mentality of Pochettino, where this guy's saying like, no, like, we're going to fucking do everything we can to win. So to me, it's just like two completely different mindsets.
Yeah, I didn't hear the interview. I'm wondering if, I mean, because if he would have said.
That was his exact quote. No matter what round we lose, we'll be disappointed.
Okay, because if he had said something like, if we don't win it, no matter where we end up having lost, you know, it would be disappointing. You know what I mean? But nah.
Yeah, he didn't.
Okay.
I was shocked. I was like, damn. And that's coming from the supposed superstar of the team. Right?
Yeah,
like if you're another player on the team and you hear that from that guy, it's like, what the fuck? I would be pissed.
Yeah, I don't know how his teammates view him or all those relationship dynamics. The only thing that came to mind is somebody like Pulisic, who's played in Europe since he was 16 years of age at the highest levels. He's more in tune than anybody else as to what the level of the opposition actually is compared to dum-dums here in MLS or dum-dums, you know, who may be in Europe but haven't experienced everything Pulisic has experienced. And he's probably looking at, you know, Rafael Leao and all these players, and he's like, there's no fucking way my rinky dinky US national team is gonna win the World Cup.
Yeah. No, that's true. I was just like surprised to hear, because usually too, like, I feel like they're better or they're more media trained to say like, yeah, we're gonna do everything that we can to win, but then when he's like, yeah, no matter when we lose, we'll be disappointed. But we'll try and make a good run.
Now I have to watch that clip, dude, or at least insert it in this thing.
Yeah, I'm going to insert it, but I'll send it to you right after. I was laughing. I was like, I have to bring this up, Gary. All right, dude, enough of the World Cup chat. There'll be more to come. Jimmy Conrad, Gary, you sent me a direct message saying another idiot. I'll just read you the tweet. So USMNT coach Mauricio Pochettino recently said, American media and American soccer coaches demonstrated a lack of respect to him. Former USMNT defender Jimmy Conrad responds, it feels like we can't question what he does, but if he was managing Argentina and they weren't doing well and had a string of results like we saw in the first half of the year, I'm pretty sure he would be criticized. And he's asking our culture to be more of a footballing nation, right? Well, what do they do in footballing nations? They criticize the shit out of their national team if they aren't playing well. So I'm not understanding this. It's either not being translated well, or this is a contradiction that I'm having a tough time grasping. the legend, Jimmy Conrad, bro.
There, and I responded to that, and you can read that if you want, but the fact of the matter is that, first off, there is no error in translation. That's not the issue at all. You heard correctly, Jimmy, that what Mauricio said. And the difference is that in Argentina, the media there actually know what the F they're talking about. They're a lot more soccer sophisticated than the likes of the media here in the States, to say the least. Okay, I'm being extremely charitable to the American soccer media. And secondly, the fans over in Argentina are outrageously more well-versed and understand a lot more about the nuances beyond the superficial than the American MLS / USMNT fan base. So the criticism over there is based in reality. You know what I mean? Like, the criticism here comes from a place of supreme ignorance. And that is the key difference. So does the US and its fan base have to be more critical? Is that an element that the world powers have? And absolutely. They criticize the crap out of their players, crap out of their national team, crap out of the federation, crap out of the clubs. They criticize like a mother effer. But, you know, we need to learn. How's this? We need to learn what to criticize and be able to discern when it's time to criticize and when it's not time to criticize. And when these folks were criticizing Pochettino, they were doing it out of supreme ignorance, Benny, and Pochettino proved them all wrong. And that's why they all had to flip like a pancake and now be like, oh, I'm on team Pochettino now. He has my full support and rah, 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 USA, because you were wrong. Your criticism was wrong. The team, it's not that the team was not performing well or anything. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with a transition period where a new coach, a world-class international caliber coach, came to a shit show and had to turn the shit show around. So there's going to be a transition period involved to get rid of all the cruft and the crap, Benny. But these fools had no idea, and they still have no idea. And so they were criticizing something that was plain stupid. So I think, Jimmy and folks, look, you have to write something. You have to create content. I get it. If you want to participate on X and on Instagram and talk about the team and the sport, you have to come up with something. I get it. I understand. But at least I am hoping that internally in your heart, you actually know that you don't know, because that's truth.
Yeah, let me play devil's advocate, Gary.
Go for it.
If you look at it 10 to 15 years ago, right, there wasn't much criticism of whether it be national team coaches or MLS coaches. So you have to kind of start somewhere, right? And you say that in other countries, obviously they're more of experts of the game and they understand the game more. But do you have to give them a little credit for trying to start learning, Gary? Because, I mean, think about it. You have to start somewhere. Right. If you want to learn something, you have to do it. Right.
Here's the thing. I agree with you. You have to start somewhere. The problem is when they think that they actually know. So you have to start somewhere, but at least acknowledge, at least to yourself, that you are a newbie who knows fuck all. You're criticizing, you're playing your role, and you have to start somewhere, and you're going to learn over the course of time. Maybe it'll take them 10 bloody more years, 15 more years to look at themselves as they were historically 10 years ago. Like Jimmy, 10 years from now, he might look at himself today and be like, fuck, I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. You know what I mean? So the difference comes in that, Benny, when you're a noob in not acknowledging that you're a noob and you're in the learning process.
Right. But Gary, I mean, if you're a media outlet person, you're never going to acknowledge that you're a noob, because you can't come out on X and say like, hey, I don't know what I'm talking about, but here's my opinion, because then you're just going to be viewed as fucking ignorant, right? They have to kind of say like, hey, this is my opinion. And yeah, I do know what I'm talking about. They're not going to come out and say, I don't know, fuck all. Right?
But no. So here's the difference again. Smart people don't do that, Benny. Smart people kind of acknowledge like, hey, like this is just my opinion, right? This is what I think. and then you proceed with your criticism. But these people don't do that, Benny. They come out both barrels firing as if they are experts and they are going to tell the audience and everybody what reality is. And they are going to tell everybody that Pochettino is a fraud who doesn't know shit about soccer. And look at Pochettino's history. He's terrible. No clue about the American player. Doesn't even talk to the players. You know, they position themselves as experts when they were making their criticisms and claims. You see the difference versus somebody who's in a new field, like even like an Elon Musk. And I know people, half our audience doesn't even like the guy because they're brainwashed fools, okay? But even like Elon Musk will come out and he will, when he's opining on robotics, when he's opining on things that he is an absolute expert in, he still positions his thoughts about everything a little bit more humbly than these fucking people when they talk about soccer.
Yeah, no, it makes sense what you're saying, Gary. But so okay, so how do they become the experts? Like, how do they become like other media outlets in other countries? Like, what do they have to do to have that level of, okay, like, I do know to some point what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think one, it's going to take time, no matter what. Okay, and yes, trial and error for sure. But if they want to accelerate their trial and error cycle and become a quote unquote expert or more of an expert quicker, then shut the fuck up and listen a lot more than talk a lot more. And don't talk as if you are already an expert. Talk a little bit more humbly and then look to people who really know what the hell they're talking about, like a Mauricio Pochettino, right? And listen and learn from those people. But these guys don't listen and learn from those people. They'll go out and start clowning on Marcelo Bielsa, that Bielsa's a fraud. You know, look, he got smacked 5-1, you know, by, like, think about that. No,
yeah.
Shut the fuck up and listen to Marcelo Bielsa's 3-hour sermon, okay? Shut the fuck up and listen to what Mauricio is actually telling you for the past year. That's how you accelerate your learning cycle. The problem too, Benny, is when you're a noob and you actually don't know, then you also actually don't know who knows. You can't tell who is an expert and who is not an expert. You're incapable of it because you're beneath that level.
Yeah. No, I agree with everything you're saying, Gary. I think the problem is they can't shut the fuck up because it's their job, right? It's their livelihood. I mean, if they're saying nothing, they're not going to get hired on as an analyst, or they're not going to have this massive following. So they have to kind of speak up, you know? And the problem is for the people that consume all of that, like you just said, if you're a noob, I mean, think about it. Who are you going to go and you're going to turn on the TV to ESPN or whatever it is? And these are the people that you're learning from, you know? So it's hard, man. You got to put in the work to be able to discern who is speaking truth and who is kind of a fraud.
It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Yeah, and I said it in our past episode, I think one particular person who's doing a good job at this is Eric Winalda. So yeah. I think people should tune into him more often. And you know what is a good signal as to who actually knows what they're talking about, who doesn't? A good signal is when these hacks in the media actually don't distribute the content from certain folks. So they don't distribute Eric Winalda's content. They don't give Eric Winalda love. They don't bring, you know what I mean? They don't bring Eric Winalda on as guests or promote Eric Winalda's things or what he says or even engage with him on social media or otherwise. That is a very strong signal that Eric knows way more than they do. That's a good signal. I'm just giving a recommendation. Oh, Gary, because I get it a lot, right? In emails where, oh, Gary, you know, how can I tell who's who? Who should I be learning from? That's a good signal for you.
Whoever's not being pushed out by the mainstream media.
There you go.
Yeah. So would you recommend to your followers, Gary, to avoid as much as possible of the mainstream media, meaning Fox and ESPN and all of those analysts?
Of course. I mean, that's an easy answer, Benny.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the hard part is now, obviously you said Eric Winalda, but it's not like he's coming out. Like, you can't learn everything from him, right? There's, if you want to dive deeper, I mean, it's hard to find a lot of people who are hearing or who are saying what you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're kind of fucked, man. Especially, again, if you're not bilingual, and especially if you don't speak Spanish, you're limited. You like, who are you going to listen to? Who are you going to tune into? What broadcasts? It's tough, man. I empathize. I get it. That's why I do my best to try to identify people who actually know something compared to these other folks, like a tactical manager like Filippo Silva. I give him love. I've done it on X. I brought him onto the show here. We've discussed him on a couple of occasions. You and I, his name has come up. So go listen to him too. I think he gets a lot of things, is on point with a lot of things. And look, he doesn't get love or distributed by the mainstream either. And he has a big audience, but they won't push his stuff.
Yeah. Now, somebody just commented, because if you remember in the last episode, how we brought up initially his stance on Pochettino was like, should the USMNT fire him? And then he kind of switched. But somebody commented like, why would you invite him on and then like talk shit on him on the next episode? I'm like, bro, did you not hear Gary say like, oh, I respect the fact that he came out and said that he was wrong on his... I don't think people like fully listen to what it is that you're saying. They just want to comment and be a keyboard warrior, I guess.
Well, they don't listen for one. And for two, I haven't come across that comment yet. Maybe I'll have to read it. Two is, what do I care if somebody comes on the show? I'm still going to speak my mind. I'm still going to speak my mind.
Yeah.
This is how these people behave though, Benny. They're like, it's all about quid pro quo. It's all about being buddy, buddy, chummy, chummy friends. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. No. I'm not going to compromise my beliefs and values because somebody was nice to me. Well, somebody was nice to me and then they went and murdered somebody. Oh no, I'm not going to speak ill of that person because they were nice to me. Fuck off. If you're wrong about something, or I believe that you're wrong about something, I don't care if you came on my show and you were cool, you know, and you invited me to go on your show. That means nothing to me. And this is actually, remember also in that episode, I said, what makes, in my opinion, people truly remarkable? The relentless pursuit of truth at any cost, at any cost. So if it costs me friendships or it costs me acquaintances or it costs me business opportunities or anything, I don't fucking care. I care about the truth.
Yeah. Let me read you more of this guy's comment, Gary, because it's kind of along the lines of what we were talking about. So initially he says like, why would you invite him on and then trash him? And then he says, are people not allowed to be wrong and then come around? Are you looking for a pat on the back for being right about Poch? I completely agree with calling out the people who don't admit they're wrong, but why the other guys who own up to it? Should people not critique and question things when the team is performing poorly and getting bad results? My understanding is that South American and European media relentlessly criticize their teams because they demand excellence. Are you saying that their media is more knowledgeable so they are allowed to be more harsh on their players and coaches? The principle of saying the media shouldn't be allowed to question and criticize the people in control of U.S. soccer doesn't seem like the best way to affect change to fix the U.S. soccer system like we all want. I am just a USMNT fan who is listening, so if anyone can help me understand, please do.
We answered everything, yeah. Have we not?
Yeah, basically, right? You just said other medias in other countries are more knowledgeable, so hopefully this guy tunes in and listens to this.
And I did not trash Filippo. I gave him a lot of respect. Actually, yeah. I used him as an example of what to do correctly, which is, hey, you talk shit on this guy, on Pochettino, you trashed him, you started saying that maybe he should be fired and stuff, and then he proved you wrong, and then you came out and said, hey, I was wrong. So I use Filippo and tactical managers, as people know him, as an example of the right behavior, the right thing to do.
Yeah. Sad, dude. Sad. People need to work on their, they need to be like, Igor, just go in their garage, no distractions,
yes,
and just actively listen if they actually want to absorb anything.
More listening, less talking. Okay.
There you go. All right, Gary, I want to get into the coaching topic that I had.
Can I, I'm sorry. I just want to get it off my chest. One more thing. And it's not for the audience. If it's for my own sake, so I studied physics and mathematics. I have advanced degrees in both. I've worked as an engineer, as a scientist. I've been teaching physics at the university level for close to 20 years. I have not said a fucking peep on social media in public. I haven't written anything about my supreme knowledge in physics, or in math, or nothing. And look at all the experience that I have under my collective belt, okay? But silence, nothing, because I have the self-awareness to recognize that I am a peon midget, know nothing in that field compared to the people who actually know what they're talking about in that field. I just want to relate that, okay, to the world of soccer a little bit. So here I am. I'm kind of using myself as an example. Look at all my experience in that domain. I shut my mouth.
Well, it's the same thing too, Gary. When I asked you to record an episode on, you know, the behind the scenes of being a player agent, and you're basically like, no.
Well, it's almost the same, because there's a distinction there. So I have the better part of 10 years experience there, and I have a lot of experience under my belt as well. I have a lot to say. I have what I believe a lot of expertise in the field. I think 99.9% of the population would learn things they've never learned and would never learn if I didn't talk about it. The difference is, Benny, in that business, you can't be open and forthcoming, because if you're open and forthcoming and you start telling people how shit works, clubs and others won't want to do business with you, because the whole industry is very dirty and it's very clandestine. It's all tight-lipped. You're not supposed to tell the public what's going on. And if you do tell the public what's going on, then that's basically asking for not being in this business. So it's a little bit different from that regard. It's not that I don't know. I know, Ben.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, Gary. But I feel like also when I asked you about that, you would also say, like, not that you don't know everything, but you said you shut your mouth because you're not like the top expert on that subject, right?
Yeah, well, so I'm not Cristiano Ronaldo's agent, or I'm not Mino Raiola, or I'm not these super agents, right, that have world-class players under their client list. And that experience is much different than the experience that I obviously have. So it's two different worlds, Benny. And it's two different skill sets also, because representing players that aren't in outrageously high demand by the whole world requires a different skill set, if that makes sense, right? And if you are managing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, if you are, you know, Totti's agent, if you are Christian Pulisic's agent, if you are, you know what I mean? Like, that's a different animal all to itself.
Yeah, now I get you here. Well, once your career is over in that, then you can add it as another chapter in your book, or it can be a whole book in itself.
No, I think, look, I've been tempted, Ben. I've been tempted because there's a lot of people here, especially here in the United States, the players are getting so effed over, and it's because they don't know. They don't know any better, Ben. I need to teach. I need to do it. At some point, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, there you go. This is completely unrelated, but what are your thoughts on the whole USL players and them demanding like the fair wages and everything? I saw you post something on X about it a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, I think this multi-episode content, because, and it extends beyond soccer, because we're dealing with unions here, right? Players, unions, and collective bargaining and all that. The one thing I really take issue with, and I think it is such a horrible thing that the USL Players Union did, was they try to use promotion relegation. They frame promotion relegation as a negative thing to make their point about improving, you know, players' working conditions, economically or otherwise. And what they said was, they had the players wear t-shirts, and they even wrote stuff online about, yeah, the league is trying to capture headlines with promotion relegation while what they should be doing is work, you know, improving their players' situations. Don't use promotion relegation as a negative, right? Because promotion relegation is literally what would liberate the players from their prisons. That is what would open the floodgates for players to actually earn their true market value. That is what creates an open free economy, an open free marketplace for players, where the clubs would go to war with each other, bidding wars to capture the player's services. So if I had a player, if I could shop them around to all the clubs, and I can instantiate a bidding war between Tampa Bay and El Paso, and you name it, and they'll go up and back and forth, and I can maximize, or the player can maximize and find their true market value, their true salary. What are they actually worth? So that would be the absolute best thing to happen to players, is promotion relegation. And these motherfuckers at the players' union framed it out in the media and everything as if promotion relegation is the culprit, or is they framed it in a bad light. What a travesty. What a harmful thing for them to do to their players. And I don't know if their players know any better of the harm that is done by doing that. Do something else. Ignore promotion relegation. Make your point without saying that.
Yeah. But Gary, I know we talked about this before. Would the promotion relegation, even though it's not true promotion relegation, basically because it's a closed system, right? You still have to kind of buy your way into USL. Would that help the players? Even if, let's say USL implemented what they said they're going to do, where it's like that three-tier system, is that actually going to help the players? Or is USL still going to be able to regulate the salaries and everything like that? Because no, basically, it wouldn't be a true open system, no?
Yeah, but the difference too, Ben, as opposed to MLS, is the players are paid and their contract is with the clubs. In MLS, the league owns the player contracts. The players play for MLS. They don't play for LA Galaxy. They don't get paid by FC Dallas or Houston. They are under contract by the league. But in USL, they're under contract to their particular clubs, their particular teams. And if that particular USL club does not want to get relegated, they're going to do everything in their power to get the best possible players that they can afford so that they stay in their top division. And if they want to get promoted from the third tier to the second tier to the eventual first tier, whatever, they are going to break the bank to try to get the best, who they think are the best players. And the only way that they're going to acquire the best players, Benny, is by bribing them with money. I will pay you double your salary if you come over here. Okay. So the players absolutely benefit from this, even if it was still not a true open market, like true promotion relegation, even if it was an internal sort of thing.
Got it. That makes sense, Gary. Fuck, you know, I wanted to get into the coaching aspect, but obviously we're coming up to the hour mark, but maybe we can give a little teaser or preview to the audience. I came across recently, Gary, I can't remember who it was. I think it was maybe Thierry Henry, or it could be somebody else, but it was an Instagram post, and it was a quote of them saying how top managers in professional leagues, that they don't give the lineup to their team until maybe about an hour or 2 hours before kickoffs, and mainly because they don't want to have the conversations with players as to why they're not playing. And I know we've talked about player management before, but I really wanted to dive deeper into the subject. You know, how do you manage player expectations? How do you manage when you have a very talented team of players where anybody can come in off the bench and produce? You know, how do you manage the expectations of the players, you know? And the fact, when I saw that, I was like, wow, like I actually can relate to those managers, because anytime that I'll, you know, release my lineup to the team, and you start seeing long faces, you see body language change. And I really wanted to dive deep into, you know, the whole topic, but maybe as a little preview, Gary, let's say you're coaching, well, let's talk about olders. Let's forget about the youth right now. Okay. And you have a team, 11 to 11 team, right? So maybe you have 18 players on your roster. Okay. And you know, you're starting 11 group, and you know the three or four guys that can come in and where they could come in and the level's not going to drop. How do you manage the players where it's like you just can't see them getting playing time? You know, how do you keep them happy? How do you keep them motivated? Because I think a lot of coaches face this dilemma where it's like anytime you put those players into the game, the level of your team drops and you're at risk of getting scored on, or you're at risk of losing the game. So the clear, obvious answer right at the end of the season is to have them move on or find a team that's more beneficial for them. But in season, right, how can you best coach those players to where you keep them motivated and you keep having them show up to work hard at training? And there's so much that I wanted to get into, but that's kind of a general overview of it.
Yeah, it's a very difficult problem. And this is actually a huge part of what coaching/managing actually is. I mean, Ben, like, where do you even begin? I think one fundamental principle that is true across all levels, from pro national team all the way to U10, okay, and everything. One fundamental principle is you'll never make everyone happy. You just have to accept that. No matter what you do, you won't make everybody happy. Even, in my opinion, even if you are the best in the world at managing what you just described, and you have everything perfectly optimized and perfectly dialed in, you know every player's psychology, so you know how to turn the dials, right, and maximize each and every player's happiness and motivation, everything, it's still not good enough. Because once you have it optimized, a week later, a month later, 2 months later, everything changes. All the expectations change from each individual, all the players, you know, and you have to start, it breaks. Your ship breaks again, and you have to try to fix it again. So this is like you're on a perpetual motion machine if you're always trying to optimize and keep everybody to maximum happiness. So I think that is a principle to then decide what you're going to do, route you're going to take. And from my vantage point, and maybe I've just been in this for too long, my current course of action is one of what word do I want to use here so people don't get triggered? One of like the benevolent dictator, okay? So it's a power thing. I am the powerful person making the roster decisions, the playing time decisions, and everybody in my group that I'm in charge of has to understand that and run with it and be okay with it, and no poopy faces, no matter who you are, whether you're a U10 sort of thing or you're a professional playing for Manchester City. I am in charge. What I say goes, and that's the end of it. There is no discussion. There is no poopy faces, and you have to work within yourself to self-motivate and say, okay, these are my circumstances. I as a player can only control what I can control. And what is that? My work ethic, my discipline, my commitment to improve myself every single day. So that would be my recommendation, my advice. And that's how I actually behave, is to try to motivate them. First, make that known. And two, try to motivate them so that they become that person themselves, where it's like, oh, the king, the dictator over there, he's just not playing me, but I can't control that. I can't. I have no power over that. So all I can do is put my head down and do my best to improve myself. Whatever else happens, happens, but I'm in control of myself. So that is what I've kind of converged to, Benny, overall. You know, it's very coincidental that you bring this up, because earlier today, as I was taking a little break from my other work, I came across a reel from Company, Vincent Company, former Manchester City, now the Bayern Munich boss. And I'm sure you've probably seen it. It's quite famous, and we should inject it here, where he's in the locker room. And obviously, these are professionals. These aren't youth players, but he's having a go at them. And he's basically telling them what I just finished divulging in different words. He's like, I'm the boss. I decide what players play, what players don't play. I don't want to see any of your faces being like, you know what I mean? Not being good teammates or going against my wishes or whatever. Like basically like she, I'm the boss. You're all my fucking slaves. Shut the fuck up and do what you're told.
Listen, no misunderstanding. There's one fucking side of me that you haven't fucking seen, boys. Number one, West, whether we play with 3, 4, 5, 6, it's my fucking decision. And I take the responsibility if we lose and if we don't perform well. The second thing, Zen, last time I talked about your attitude, you come off, I don't need a fucking smile, but I need the attitude that's perfect. You were not good, just like all the other one. I could have taken off from Hendrick to the last one without anyone complaining. Today, we deserve to lose anyway. We can be fucking happy with 1 point. 95 minutes, we just wasted time. You wasted your time, I wasted my time. It was better not to come. It was better to send the under 21.
So, Ben, that's how I feel nowadays. And it doesn't matter what age or what level. You come up with the expectations. Don't project yourself to the group like I just projected to you, because I'm speaking to adults here through this podcast. I'm speaking to you. If you're speaking to an 11-year-old team and their parents and players, you're not doing this body language or this posture coming off this strong, but you do communicate precisely the essence of what I just shared.
Unless you're an absolute savage when you're at the parent meeting saying, I'm the fucking boss and what I see goes.
And the problem is this all comes down to how powerful are you really as a coach and how much do you actually know? How much of an expert are you? Because if you are a newbie coach, and a newbie coach to me anyway is somebody who's coached less than 5 years. If you're a newbie coach in the youth game, first off, what credibility do you have to come across like that? People are going to be like, they'll chuckle, you know, like, who the fuck are you? I'm out of here. I'm taking my kids somewhere else or whatever. You're not going to be respected. So your approach is going to have to be a little bit different. And the fact of the matter is you're probably going to have to eat a lot of shit and bow down and brown nose the parents and kiss ass and play the players that you don't want to play and kiss the director of coaches ass and do what he tells you to do. That's just reality. So, but eventually I think you end up converging to what I just described. So maybe once you have 7, 8, 15 years of experience and you're a badass, you know what you know, and you're known in the ecosystem in your particular marketplace that you are one of the top dogs. Okay. Then you've entered the regime that I just described. But I think that is ultimately the solution, Benny, because as a leader, not just in soccer, in any endeavor, you have to have that. You have to lead. You can't be pushed around by the people that, you know, you're supposed to be leading. If they're pushing you around, what kind of a leader are you? No, you make the decisions.
Yeah. And it's also a lot easier and you have more leverage when you're winning, right, Gary? Because if you're losing, a player can come to you and say like, oh, see, you should have started me. You should have started me over this player. And look, we lost the game, right? But it's also really hard, Gary, for coaches nowadays because they're coaching a different generation of kids. Whereas what you said, like, hey, I'm the boss. If you're not playing, like, I'm the one that's deciding that. You can't control that. There are very few kids today who will accept that, right? And will say like, all right, I'm going to listen to coach and I'm going to keep having a good attitude. 90% of kids today, Gary, will fold or they'll start having a bad attitude or they'll start making like little comments under their breath, right? It's very rare that you see a player that's going to respond in a positive way. So that's another challenge that coaches are facing today. It's a whole new generation of players.
Yeah.
And go for it.
No. So you're pointing at a broader societal, civilizational issue that we have. No. And you as a coach, you can't fix that. They come pre-programmed to you with all this sort of, with this mentality. You can't fix it. So, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I would understand you if you start questioning your choice of profession. Like, why should I even be a coach if this is the reality of coaching? And I'm saying it also from a perspective of a teacher. It's happening. The same thing's happening with students. And students who aren't even kids, students who are at the university, so students from the ages of 17 to 25 years of age, have this sort of, I don't know, calcified neural tree with respect to their behavior. You can't change that, Benny. So what to do? Some people are naive who maybe aren't even in the profession. They're like, oh, well, Gary, you still have to try. You have to do what you think is in their best interest anyway, no matter what. It's kind of like saying, Gary, there's a you're on the bottom of Niagara Falls. Try to get the water to not come fall down. You know, do your best to push it up, you know, to the top. You're asking something that is just not rooted in reality. So this whole discussion, Benny, if we truly believe that this is a broader societal thing, it has no solution for you as an individual coach, no matter where you're coaching at. You're just going to bang your head against the wall. Go ahead, try, be my guest, do your best, it's valiant, noble. Give it a good old noble try. But I'm telling you, good luck. It ain't happening.
For sure. Well, Gary, some people will be surprised to hear that it even happens at the professional game. I just came across, and I wish I screenshot it because I don't remember who the player was, but it's a young player playing in a European league. And I think at 17, right, he was starting for the first team. You know, the following year, he's still on the first team, but not playing on the bench. And bro, he goes on Twitter and posts like, oh, this is very disappointing. Like, bro, you're on a professional team. And like, think about what your coach or your manager is going to think about when they see you post that on Twitter. Like, oh yeah, I'm very disappointed that I'm not playing. Like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? That's insane to me.
That you're gonna distinction, go on track. Yeah. The good thing for them, Ben, is that at the professional game, the managers have leverage and the clubs have leverage.
Yeah.
So as opposed to your youth situation, right? You don't have any leverage. The family, whoever, they can just pack up and leave. And say, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to do some research and find which player. Because I was like, wow, bro, it's sad that you're posting. Like, just fucking put your head down and keep working. Why do you have to go on Twitter and bitch to all your followers? Like, oh, I'm so disappointed. Fucking work harder, dude. You're 19 years old. Anyway, bro, there's so much to unpack, bro. There's also, like, the managing the parent expectations. And there's so much I wanted to get into, but we'll save it for the next set.
Okay, fair enough.
Good stuff, dude.
Now
I'm looking forward to your World Cup prediction. When did you say? After the March window?
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's very difficult. You know, France is always good, but I don't know. Argentina, I don't know. Holland, I don't think so. Portugal, like... let's just kill ourselves if Ronaldo wins with Portugal. That's just retarded. Like, we can't have that. I don't know. I don't know who can win. I don't know.
For you, Gary, who's the best player in the world right now? Seems like there's no, like, clear front runner, no?
No. No, there's this kid. I wish folks were more bilingual. Some are. There's this kid in Argentina. He's, I don't know, early 20s, a streamer. He's like one of the most popular, not only in Argentina, but in the world now. His name is Davo, D-A-V-O. And again, I ran across one of his clips where he first shows a bunch of clips from old school soccer matches, you know, when it was Ronaldinho and Kaká and Roberto Carlos and Beckham and that whole generation, late 90s, early 2000s. And this is a kid in his early 20s, so it's even before his time, but he's such a student of the game. This guy's a machine, by the way. This guy knows more about football than anybody I've ever run across in the history of football, period. Like, he just outrageous, a savant, okay? He's like, nah, man. That what have they done to football? That was football. There is no football right now. Right now, it's all garbage nonsense. There's nothing to watch. There's nothing's interesting. Nothing's exciting. So when you ask me, hey, who's the best in the world now? I can't even answer. Nothing is exciting, Benny. Lamine was exciting, you know, back a year ago. It was like, oh my God, the 17-year-old, that look at these outrageous things. The last edition of the Champions League, right? And yeah, he's still, it's just not the same, Ben. Yeah. You know, you look at Real Madrid and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, Mbappe, cool. And Vinny doesn't excite me, you know, and it's just not exciting.
Yeah. Mbappe's kind of had like a regression, honestly. Like, I remember in his first World Cup, he was just so fucking dominant, bro. Yeah. And now, he's still a world-class player, but he's not taking over games like he used to.
There's just no magic, Benny. Like, even Mbappe, Mbappe's not magical. He's a powerhouse, a steamroller. You know, he just blows by you with raw speed, athleticism. It's not the same as R9. You know, it's not the same as Neymar. It's not the same as Dino. It's not the same as Messi. It's just not the same. It's exciting, but not the same.
Yeah. Very
it's all shit. Football. So you asked me, oh, Gary, would you get a ticket to go to a World Cup match? I'm like, fuck that. Like, it's just not exciting, Benny.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to see a pressing masterclass from the USMNT, bro?
Yeah. I really like Pochettino, man. I'm glad that the American public was forced to kind of come around and forced to have their eyes open a little bit more. But it's only because he had good results the past four friendlies against very good opposition.
Yeah.
I don't know how that'll last.
I just hope that they're successful in the March window, bro, because if they lose those games, bro, you're going to see how quick people are going to turn on him again right before a World Cup. It's like, it's the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah, he had a press conference right now after the World Cup draw. I mean, I would recommend, if you haven't watched it, to watch it. He gives a lot of other gems there, and maybe we should do a breakdown of it at some point. But one of the particular things that he shared with the public here that does not know and is not aware is that he was a member of the Argentine national team in that 2002 World Cup under Marcelo Bielsa, when Argentina went into that World Cup as the number one or number two favorite to win the whole thing. They had a 30-something game unbeaten streak leading into that World Cup. And they crashed out at the group phase. Toast. Goodbye. Done. So, like we said in last episode, Pochettino, the U.S. men's national team, if they had some sort of catastrophe, it doesn't mean that Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing.
100%. All right, Gary. Like Belusic said, bro, either when we lose, we'll be disappointed. I'm going to send you the thing right now.
Okay. Very good, Benny. Right,
cooking tonight?
I cook every night, brother.
What are you making?
It's going to be a shrimp scampi for the girl with angel hair pasta.
Yeah, that sounds bomb, dude.
Pretty good.
Send a picture. And have you mastered pad thai?
I haven't made pad thai in like 4 months, ever since we... 4 months? Yeah, about 4 months. But it's gotten way better than... Have you tried the pad thai or no?
That you've made?
Yeah.
I haven't tried anything that you made.
Oh, no shit. Okay. And it's gotten better, man.
Only your steaks back in the day when you'd have fucking barbecues.
But we're gonna have to have you and the girl over one of these days, man. Maybe when the baby is a little bit more mature and you guys feel comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Have you seen the clip of Gordon Ramsay making pad thai with like a Thai chef?
Yes. Yes.
Like, he's like, what the fuck is this?
He's like, this is trash.
I hope they're gonna be happy with this. You know that?
I think the man will be happy.
Prawns and fresh coriander finish the pad thai. But what will Chan think of my quick and easy version of this classic?
And then some peanuts around the outside.
Happy?
Oh, no.
But I had to test.
Yeah, please.
Before you go call pad thai, I have to test it first. What do you want to know from me? Ask me.
Well, how is it?
Hmm?
Oh, no. Look at that face.
This is not pad thai at all.
This is not pad thai. No.
Pad thai have to be sweet, sour, and salty.
I think that doesn't taste too bad. It's not perfect.
For you, but not for me.
You're a tough cookie.
He's like, this is not pad thai.
Yeah, so good.
It was time. All right, dude.
Okay, later, Vanny. Thank you.
Have a good night. Later.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.